Hi, I'm Chris Spisak, and this is the Words You Should Know podcast. A few stolen minutes out of your day to talk words and communication, because our daily lives are surrounded by the evolution and influence of words. Forget the grammar police. There is so much more to this conversation. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 30 of the Words You Should Know podcast. It's funny how when you tune your ear to it, talk about words and communication is just about everywhere. Football teams suffer because of lack of communication on the field. Resumes are weakened by sloppy verb choices. The messages sent back and forth on a favorite dating app can say so much, intentionally or otherwise. Social media giants like Facebook are issuing new corporate guidelines on internal communications. Practically every business is learning how to reimagine team communications when employees are working from home. Words. We can't escape them, yet they shape our lives. There's one story that keeps popping back into the headlines, and since I caught it again earlier this month, I want to hear your reactions. This is serious stuff. Period. No, really. Let's talk about periods in text messages. Are they aggressive? Are they marks of dramatic seriousness? Are they just little dots of digital ink that the grammatically inclined add from writing muscle memory? Some argue that positive responses via text, like, sounds good, okay, or sure, followed by a period, turn a simple agreement into a passive-aggressive response, and reporting is showing that this could easily be a generational divide. What are your thoughts on this? Do you include punctuation in text messages? What about that final period? Send me a response. I'd love to know. And if we're getting into the subtleties of language and technology, let's shift from text messages to spoken communications. Because a Japanese robotics company called Donut Robotics, yep, you heard that correctly, has recently released a language translator that isn't just an app on your smartphone, but built into a face mask. Did overcoming language barriers while social distancing just become easier? Fascinating. I know I'm following this innovation story. Technology brings up so many communication quandaries, and I'm not just talking about improving your communications on your favorite video meeting software. Here's the biggest question that caught me in communications news in the past few weeks. Maybe you're familiar with the evolution of the English language due to colonization over the past few centuries, where American English and Australian English, for example, have transformed over time to have their own particularities, though they both stem from the same British English origin. However, here's the mind-blowing part. As conversations continue about space travel and a mission to Mars, the question has been posed whether those participants in a Mars mission or any other space mission of duration would create a language time capsule of sorts, holding onto the language of the day from the month and year they left Earth, or whether this language could transform over time in new settings and circumstances. Thank you, Slate Magazine, for posing this idea. Think of a regionalism you might be familiar with, a word or a phrase that anyone from a certain place might understand, but that an outsider might be utterly confused by. These things happen naturally when language slowly shifts inside geographical pockets. Now, what if this happens on an interplanetary level? This is so out there, I know, but not beyond the bounds of what we've seen in language history. Will awesome sauce endure far after it's fallen out of use on Earth? Okay. Kidding with that last one, but aren't you captivated by this question? So with that as our basis, for today's language history and trivia segment, let's delve into the little-known pockets of language preservation. The English language has shifted and evolved in so many ways, and of course it continues to do so. Some say that until recently, the closest we had to remnants of Shakespearean English were in the communities of the Appalachian Mountains in the United States. These were, for a long time, places not greatly touched by American cultural change or outside influences. But Shakespearean English, is this true, or is it a romanticized linguistic story to connect Americans' roots with the greatness of Shakespeare or even sometimes Chaucer? Here's what the research tells us. According to some historians, some of the non-standard English used in Appalachia was employed by the highest-ranking nobles of England and Scotland. For example, it wasn't until the 17th and 18th centuries before many people were careful with their usages of you were versus you was. Much of this, of course, calls back to old singular versus plural you forms, which we've discussed. But in that transition period, you was existed. There's a history to this phrasing, and it's not considered correct in our modern language, and yes, it might rub you the wrong way. But there was indeed a day when it was an acceptable form. Knowing this doesn't make it correct, but it does give this usage a bit more historical respect. The same is true for phrasings like, bring them books over here, to quote an example from one historian. In the 1500s, this was commonly used English. Whether the positioning of the object them, as in bring them books over here, pulls from French usage or has other origins, I'm not quite sure. But it's intriguing that there's a difference between uneducated stereotypes and linguistic patterns that have been ingrained and undisturbed for centuries. Here's another old usage that remains in pockets of America. The word reckon. I reckon, meaning I suppose or I consider, was an expression common to Tudor England. These language subtleties fascinate me, but it's the usage of these linguistic roots in the American story that fascinates me even more. If you know anything about the Appalachian region, you know it isn't and never has been a singular culture. There's room for debate in the boundaries even, but the examined speech patterns of Appalachia are commonly ones found in the mountains from northern Alabama to West Virginia. There are decades of research, perhaps even a century of citations referring to William Shakespeare's English spoken in the mountains. Which mountains quite has remained unclear, and Geoffrey Chaucer's name has come up enough times to gain public attention too. So what's the truth of this legend? It seems to be true that some elements of centuries-old English lingered in certain pockets of America, specifically in the mountains of Appalachia. Now, naming these certain language patterns and lasting word choices as Shakespeare's English might be a bit of a stretch. But then again, the poetry of an Appalachian simile might just make that comparison easier to understand. We do love our tall tales, rooted in truth, then somehow magnified, grown as big as Paul Bunyan and his massive blue ox named Babe. Maybe this is just a linguistic tall tale. Storytelling is indeed powerful. Time, greater ease and necessity of travel, globalization, and ubiquitous media exposure have changed much of the Appalachian reality in recent decades. But this language history is worth paying attention to. Transformations are all around us, but so are memories of the past if we dare to look for them. Okay. Since we're talking about Appalachia today, here's today's language challenge. How do you spell the word y'all? Or maybe I should say, where's the apostrophe? I just felt some of you cringe when I said that. If this was you, I will toss a different question your way. I hear ya. If something is routine, nice and clear, or ordinary, would you call it cut and dry or cut and dried? Dry or dried? Cut and dry. Or cut and dried? So many questions. So little time. The answers, as always, are in my show notes. For my personal update, I'll share some excitement. There's a stage in the publishing process where the book is largely finished. Revisions, edits, and formatting are all complete. This is the point where the official ARC, or advanced reader copy, takes shape. So pretty much the final book without any of the review quotes on the back, where there's room for any tiny corrections if needed, but hopefully all of that was smoothed over in the line editing process. And I have the ARC for my new book in my hands this week. This is that moment after so much work, after the team effort has been underway for a while, when it all becomes real. My ARC will go out to its first batch of early readers this week, and what happens next, we'll see. As a follow-up to Get a Grip on Your Grammar, 250 writing and editing reminders for the curious and confused, and then my second book, the novel editing workbook, 105 tricks and tips for revising your fiction manuscript, this is my third book, the Family Story Workbook. 105 prompts and pointers for writing your history, because stories are important. Your stories, whoever you are, whoever your family is and ever has been, these stories are vital for world stories to be understood. The power of harnessing your words and your story and examining how you can use language to change the world. Yep, everything I do is centered right there. Where are you and your words going to go next. Are you curious or confused about the words you use every day? For more information, there's always my book, An Elements of Style for the Twitter Generation, called Get a Grip on Your Grammar. You can also sign up for my monthly newsletter full of tips and trivia about language. Learn more at getagriponyourgrammar.com. Thank you so much to those of you who have taken the time to rate or review this podcast. That actually means a lot in terms of helping our audience grow, and I really appreciate it. And if you haven't, why don't you head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google or Stitcher or wherever you listen to do so. I am so grateful for it. And as always, I invite you to share your latest writing and communication updates or insights with me. I love hearing from you. Again, you can connect at getagriponyourgrammar.com. Until next time, words, language, communication. We've got this.